from education to employment and everything in between.
It's a clearinghouse for all things shale.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting from my basement bunker still. Earlier in the week, it was a little cold, but today I'm starting to see the icicles melt. I even heard some snow sliding off the roof. Mr. Henderson calling in from our Williamsport Bureau. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Good to be on here. And as you mentioned, we're seeing some melt. Temperatures increased a little bit. We're above freezing, so we're glad to see that, and we'll see some of this white stuff melt away. It's good timing, as it kind of gives us some hope for spring.
I call it just living in Northeast Pennsylvania, I guess.
That's a good way. That's
as you mentioned, that big bright orange thing in the sky, I just pulled up PJM's fuel mix, and today we're projecting somewhere just shy of 100,000 megawatts of power, which is down significant from when it was cold. Mm-hmm. Renewables are looking to crank out about 6% of that load today, so that's higher than we normally see it. But solar is double what it normally is, and it's actually up to 1,300 megawatts. So solar is contributing 1% of our grid today, and I think that has a lot to do with that sun actually being out, Matt.
I think it does. You know, the sun shows up for work once in a while, you know, so we can get a little bit of, like you said, a little bit of energy, 1%. I'm just glad we're not like our friends in Texas who were more reliable on that or dependent upon that, which we've talked about and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about here. So
I don't think that's going away anytime soon, buddy.
and I hope the lessons are learned. You know, we've seen that spike or seen those issues in the past couple of years in Texas, but it's been maybe a 1 day event and they're back up in the 50s and 60s. But this prolonged event, unfortunately, casualties out there and individuals did not make it through. And, you know, the supply chain disruption and all kinds of issues that they'll be dealing with, you know, broken water pipes and stuff. So let's hope some lessons are learned, not just in there, but from a national perspective. And we move forward in a more smart manner as we continue to evolve our energy use in the United States.
No, it certainly is. And just for comparison, we got about 1% of our power today coming from solar on the PJM grid. And the breakdown, nuclear is doing 31 times that, coal is doing 24 times that, and natural gas is doing 36 times that. So again, thanks to the three major staples, almost all of our power is coming from those three major staples, coal, nuclear, and of course, natural gas today. So, I mean, just night and day comparison between energy sources. And we're not doing it to bash solar and wind and other renewables. We're just trying to help you understand, especially when you hear in the news all the time, solar is more competitive now. There's more solar being built left and right. But just think how many billions of dollars have gone into building up what solar capacity we have currently in PJM and what it actually produces versus that same cost of drilling one more natural gas well or building one more distributed power generation site like IMG Midstream or even a large-scale power plant like Invenergy or Moxie and the reliability that they bring to us.
Well, yeah, and you know, I like to my Twitter account when I do send stuff out, use hashtag Facts Matter, and I think you brought those facts to the conversation, and it's important for people to know, you know, where we stand, you know, where the future might be, but as we stand today, on a very sunny day, I would say, you know, like you said, 1%, 1.3% maybe of our power generation. It's important to know. It's important to know, especially if a lot of our listeners and our brethren in the industry, a lot of time like those facts so that when they have those conversations, you know, with their neighbors, the school, the church, the grocery store, wherever it is, they have some of those facts that they can have an intelligent conversation. So.
No, certainly. And talking about intelligent conversations, talking about grid reliability, I'd be remiss. I forgot to introduce DC Taylor, and I just want to thank him for keeping us on the air.
Somebody say intelligent conversation. Hi, guys. How are you? I'm here.
We're doing well. And of course, Rusty Fender, he'll be joining us in a little bit for Fender's Fast Facts and update us on all the stuff he finds himself in these days. He is a character, but we love him on the program here. Couple of national stories. Utah governor, 16 others signed letter to President Biden opposing oil and gas leasing ban. Utah's governor has signed a joint letter with 16 other governors opposing the oil and gas leasing ban that President Joe Biden is pushing. The letter reads, "We implore you to withdraw Executive Order 14008 issued on January 27th, which bans new oil and gas development on federal land and offshore waters. There are so many parts of the country where energy is more than a utility bill or a tank of gas. It is a job-creating industry that provides good careers and steady paychecks to families in rural areas and small towns." Matt, your thoughts on this ban? I know we, as a show, have taken a position of we're against it, but what are your thoughts on this ban?
Yeah, and then I definitely, like you said, opposed to it, and I think that, you know, they mentioned this is job creation. It's in the Utah and some of the states out there are much, much more dependent on from a tax revenue and a tax base for, you know, schools and healthcare, you know, their infrastructure. You know, this revenue generates, you know, supports these states. So, and, you know, the thing is, and I brought this up and we'll continue to bring this up. What's the plan? You know, let's ban it here, but we need this energy. We need these jobs. Okay. If you have a plan in place that makes sense and is, you know, you're going to continue to provide that tax revenue, those jobs and the positive impact in the community, yeah, let's look at it. But in this case, it's not. It's just a stroke of the pen to satisfy the donors, in my opinion, and the people out there who are opposed to, you know, fossil fuel development, while at the same time, of course, you know, reaping the benefits of, you know, better, cleaner air, cleaner water, lower cost energy out there. So, you know, just, and I, you know, one thing is, I think there's a lot of pushback or more pushback than the Biden administration was anticipating. And I think that's a good thing because it does put it on the national media where you can't really hide the conversation or, you know, temper down some of these letters like this or open conversations that some of the powers that be are having out there. So I think that's good that it hopefully puts a little bit of pause in the administration's efforts as they move forward.
Another story here takes us across the pond, as they would say. U.S. oil to join North Sea crude price blanket. Financial reporting Financial Times is reporting U.S. production will join European pricing benchmarks, reflecting the changing shape of the global market more than four decades after an American company brought the first North Sea crude ashore in the U.K. I just share the story to talk about the impact, both economically and from a geopolitical standpoint, that U.S. oil and natural gas development is having, especially when we export that to the world markets. And the next story ties into that. Allies worried that Biden's shaky on Putin's pipeline. Russia's adversaries in Central and Eastern Europe are worried that President Biden isn't willing to fight hard to stop the Russia-Germany pipeline Nord Stream 2, one of Putin's core priorities. Why it matters, the fight is the first significant test of whether Biden's tough rhetoric against Russian leaders will be matched by action. Russian opponents fear Biden doesn't want to antagonize Merkel, who's the president of Germany there, or the chancellor of Germany, and won't inflict serious costs on the Germans for participating in the project. So I tell you those stories back to back. Here we are with the ability to export oil, export natural gas to Europe. We have allies who want to receive our product. Our former president, President Trump, was very hard and stern against building Nord Stream 2 for a variety of reasons. It increases Russia's ability to control Eastern European nations, especially during energy crunch times, hot summers, cold winters. It also continues pushing oil that isn't in natural gas, that isn't developed under the same stringent regulations that we have in this country. And it just continues to, you know, change the geopolitical shape of what Europe and Russia look like. So here we are. Again, it'll be interesting to see what Biden actually does versus what Trump was trying to do. I find we used to talk about Nord Stream 2 a lot more on the program. But again, with these two stories, Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. It's a good test to see. And as you mentioned, you know, the Russia's stranglehold that they have on, you know, Eastern Europe and in those countries. And, you know, from an energy perspective, you know, in a short, you know, relatively short time, you know, the 10, 12 years that, you know, U.S. has become a, you know, more of the energy dominant, you know, country out there. And as you mentioned, all the geopolitical implications, it'll be a good test for the administration to see, because, you know, anybody who follows it, and you get, say, let's go say you go down in the weeds, and, you know, as you're aware, you know, my work at Penn State, we got to travel over there numerous times, did a lot of work with Eastern European countries, and they were just thrilled of the opportunity to, one, you know, develop their resources, import resources, but mostly have, you know, have more than one option. You know, brother Russia wasn't controlling their price. And, you know, it's not just price and stuff, but when you look at it, the number of deaths, you know, people, you know, need that energy, need that heat, and these countries couldn't afford it. And, you know, unfortunately had to make some of those hard choices that, you know, from a, you know, not just a death, but quality of living, you know, from an educational standpoint. So let's hope that, you know, we don't step back, you know, just maybe because of you know, a feeling that this aligns with some of the former, you know, President Trump's priorities and stuff. So as you mentioned, a good test, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this in the future as we see what you know, what the administration actually does.
Oil rises on positive forecasts, slow U.S. output restart. Oil prices rose Tuesday, underpinned by the likely easing of COVID-19 lockdowns around the world, positive economic forecasts, and lower output as U.S. supplies were slow to return after deep freeze in Texas shut down crude production. Vaccine news is helping oil, as likely the removal of mobility restrictions over the coming months on the back of vaccine rollouts should further boost oil demand and thus price recovery. I think it's something we've talked about on this show for a long period of time. There's major factors both from manufacturing capacity, but even travel, with oil not being used as much for gasoline production, with people not traveling as much, both by car and by air. So it's something the industry needs, and I think we all kind of benefit from it. This story caught my attention, and I'm curious to see what Matt has to say about this, because I don't believe he's heard this one yet. Romney, Senator Romney, I'm very open to a carbon tax, E&E News reports. Senator Mitt Romney out of Utah signaled yesterday that he would support carbon pricing, potentially making him a key player as lawmakers look for ways to pass climate policy through closely divided Senate chambers. I'm very open to a carbon tax, carbon dividend, where there's a tax on oil companies and coal companies and so forth, Romney said during a virtual event yesterday with the New York Times. And then the funds that are raised then go back to the individual taxpayers so they can meet the cost of the higher price of energy. Seems to me kind of strange. You're going to tax the carbon. I got to pay more for it. And then you're going to give me some of the money back. Yeah. So I think you could accomplish the same thing by, you know, lessening regulatory burdens and cost constraints. But what are your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, great. You know, let's charge you $10 more, but we're going to give you $6 back of it. Yeah. And you know, we'll take four for the government. I just curious, did he announce his intent to run for president again in that statement? Or is he trying to pander to the both sides? But yeah, again, just. I got it. It doesn't have common sense in there. And, but, you know, it's a sign of the times, I guess, you know, as things are changing, is he, you know, trying to jump on the bandwagon, you know, going to New York Times as well and putting, you know, trying to soften the blow by saying, hey, we're going to give some of it back and, you know, lower the, you know, your true cost. But as we know, many times we've heard that before, you know, I believe we shouldn't be paying property tax in Pennsylvania now because of the casinos. I think that was brought up for a couple different increased taxes or increased initiatives out there by different administrations and stuff. So, yeah, again, it just boggles your mind where the logic is in statements like that.
It does. I can't understand why people do that. Last story here before we get Defenders Fast Facts. Survey calls for second ever U.S. natural gas storage draw above 300 BCF. S&P Global reports U.S. natural gas stocks posted a massive draw last week, likely well north of 300 BCF, as the end of the season storage outlook has changed dramatically in only 2 weeks. The U.S. Energy Information Administration is expected to report over 333 billion cubic feet withdrawn to end the week of February 19th. It would register as the second largest. I don't know why they repeated themselves on the article there, but it's something that we've talked about on this show for a long time. Shale has been its best friend and worst enemy. Prior to the shale revolution, as we know, companies would drill and frack during the summer, and they would inject or store gas leading into the winter to have extra production when things got really cold, and they would draw down that storage, especially near major metropolitan areas, large manufacturing hubs, or where there's large population centers. Because of the rise of shale and because of the prolific nature of shale, we no longer need to have as much storage because the shale fields are producing an overabundance of natural gas, so much so that we're in a position to export to other states, export around the world. So the question becomes, these storage hubs where companies have invested and hedged and put money into them are actually one of the reasons why the price of gas keeps going lower or not rebounding higher during the winter months. And it's just interesting to see that finally we had a cold winter, what I consider more of a normal winter in here in Northeast Pennsylvania, and then some unforeseen cold down in Houston in the Midwest prolonged. So a lot of that was drawn out. And I think the industry definitely needs to see that draw out happen or get back to more of a regular, you know, flow. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and that brings up another point. I think we've had Tom Gelrich on, who's very familiar, you know, and doing some work. Or sorry, you know, worked with the, you know, ethane crackers and has done some work and looking at, you know, storage, Appalachian storage hub. And as you bring, you know, the storage fields, obviously they serve a tremendous purpose. But, you know, when we have, I think, on average, what, 2.2 or, you know, trillion cubic feet of storage out there in the fields. And as you mentioned, now with the infrastructure and able to, you know, deliver gas almost, you know, real time, I think that opens up more opportunities, you know, depending, of course, where these fields are located and stuff. But as we in this Appalachian Basin are focused on downstream a little bit more now and utilization of the resource, the question is, well, where are we going to store this? Are there opportunities? And as you mentioned, was it 300 some, you know, is a record draw or second highest, which I mentioned twice. I just think it opens more opportunities. You know, like you mentioned, this was maybe a normal winter for us in the Northeast, or more of a normal, but it was also a tougher winter, I guess, harsher winter in terms of using, you know, pulling gas out. But we're nowhere near, you know, the concern of, you know, running short of supply as we maybe 10, 15 years ago. There was times that, as you mentioned, you know, try to get through the winter, basically. You know, it's kind of like the farmers. You go out, put everything in storage. You hope you make it through the spring and plant the new crops and go out. Well, we're not at that point anymore. So I think it opens up more opportunities personally. And, you know, with that kind of just-in-time delivery that we have with the tremendous, you know, natural gas, you know, the infrastructure that's out there, the wells and stuff. So it's, you know, just a little take on that, but interesting dynamics.
Certainly is. Well, going from one interesting dynamic to another, I think it's time for Fender's Fast Facts. Rusty, what do you have for us?
And thanks, Bill. On March 1st, which is Monday, I believe, yes, Titanic, the first movie in Hollywood history to break $1 billion. Dollars. That's a lot of money, wow. DC. $1 billion on nice. Monday. And some, fun facts about Titanic. Titanic, the first movie ever in the history of home video to go to VHS while still in the theaters. That's what a smash that was. How about that? Won 11 Academy Awards. The film was so popular, Paramount Pictures had to send out replacement reels on 35 millimeter film to most theaters because they were worn out from running it day and night.
Wow.
And that was a really good movie, I got to tell you. One of my favorites.
Yeah, I liked it.
It was fantastic. 3.5 hours. Very small men. Every stuntman in the movie, which was 86 stuntmen, they were no taller than 5 feet to make the engine room scene look bigger. That's an old ploy. That's a very old ploy.
Okay.
Small people.
All right.
Of course, Rose was the oldest Academy Award winner at the age of 87. Rose, the elderly couple featured in Titanic, actually were the owners of Macy's department store, Ida and Isidore Strauss, who both died on the Titanic. The water they were in the ship while it was sinking was 3 feet deep. Rose and all the other actors wore four sizes too small when the ship was sinking, but the rest of the costumes were four sizes bigger. It was deliberately larger to make all the folks look more vulnerable in the sinking scenes. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
All right.
That's some of the things you know about this. The ship exterior, of course, was almost a full-scale half of a Titanic, so it was split in half. It was exactly as long, and the ship was constructed in a tank on a beach south of Rosarito, Baja California, Mexico. The entire set was mounted on hydraulic jacks and could be tilted up to 16 degrees. And keeping it authentic, all the furnishings and decor in the movie were made under supervision of the White Star Line, the original company that constructed and furnished the original ship. Truly incredible.
Wow.
They really did a lot of history with this.
Painstaking detail.
Absolutely. And DC, after the filming of the movie, which took 7 months, by the way, after the filming, the remains of James Cameron's Titanic, the ship, were sold as scrap metal. Roughly how much did that bring in, the scrap metal of the ship they used to make the movie? What do you think?
Let's see. Take a ballpark estimate here. I don't know. I'll go with $5 million.
Not even close. You're off on this one. $16,000 is all it brought in, because a lot of the ship was actually made of wood to make it lighter when they tilted the ship upright when it was sinking.
Yeah.
So $16,000, that was it. It was half of the ship. It was sold to scrap metal. And, of course, the first movie to gross $1 billion, March 1st, 1998. And, of course, it's upwards of $3 or $4 billion now with home video. Titanic, DC. And those are the fun facts this week.
All right. Thank you, Rusty. And we'll continue with more of the shale gas news with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, Matt Henderson, and me, DC Taylor, coming up in just a few. Please stay tuned.
Why are natural gas pipelines important?
The most efficient and effective way to safely move natural gas is through a pipeline system.
We're constantly monitoring our systems and making sure that we're operating in the most reliable and, most importantly to me, the safest manner possible.
This system, over its life, is 99.9997% safe.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Get your new roof installed with Green Rhino Builders. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. They service all of Northeast PA. Green Rhino Builders can meet you in person, video chat, or even speak over the phone. They can even get you an estimate without stepping foot on your property. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. That's 844-900-GREEN now to get your free estimate. Green Rhino Builders can even finance your new roof for as low as $79 per month. Does your roof have damage that may have been caused by the weather? Green Rhino Builders is the first company in NEPA to work with all of the major insurance companies and can help you get your replacement roof for only the cost of your insurance deductible. Call 844-900-GREEN now to get someone from Green Rhino Builders out to your home to inspect your roof. Call Green Rhino Builders, 844-900-GREEN, for your free estimate today. Online at greenrhinobuilder.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Whole pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that that helps out too because it is before taxes.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule. The 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
If you're in construction or the gas industry, your team's getting it done 24 hours a day, and so is BX3. When you're working, so is BX3. They're your prime connection to parts, tools, and equipment rentals. If they don't have it at their Montrose or Tunkhannock locations, they'll find it for you, somehow, some way. Trust me, they know people who know people. They're the relentless problem solvers. Call BX3 in Tunkhannock, 836-3000. In Montrose, it's 278-7368. Again, Tunkhannock, 836-3000. Montrose, 278-7368.
Welcome back to the Shell Gas News. It's our pleasure to welcome back a friend of the program, Joe McGinn, Vice President of Public Affairs and Energy Transfer. And I got to admit, Joe, you're one of the people I miss the most running into in Harrisburg, in the capital there, just because of COVID keeping us all in our, you know, our basement bunkers or not traveling around as much. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for asking. Yeah, miss you as well. You know, this, you know, COVID and not being able to engage and see people in person certainly is getting old. So I'm looking forward to getting back together in person. So hope you're doing well. Glad we're on the phone again, and at least we're talking, right? Even if it's not in person.
Yeah, we like to joke that we broadcast from our basement bunkers. I, of course, up here in Northeast Pennsylvania, and Matt Henderson calling in from the Williamsport Bureau, as we like to joke, out in the center part of the state. But again, I just add on this part, just the energy industry during this whole time, whether it be COVID, whether it be weather related issues, companies like Energy Transfer have just been leading the way. And it's exciting to have you guys on again the program to talk about all the great work you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, yeah, Joe, again, appreciate you joining us here. And as we've discussed, and, you know, I think everybody's getting, worn out on the virtual meetings, and it's be good to when we can see people face to face in the near future. And I think the one thing that we've talked about on this show and we've seen as this pandemic has gone on is the response. You know, even though we're not able to host in-person events, or we're not out, people can't see each other as much. You know, the one thing is, during this pandemic, we've seen a tremendous response from the industry. So I just wondered, if you could talk a little bit about, the role the oil and gas industry has, played during this pandemic, and some of the response that we've seen from, companies like Energy Transfer and fellow industry partners.
Yeah, I think, Matt, glad you asked the question. And I think, natural gas and the energy industry has kind of been, in many ways, a unsung hero, kind of the offensive guard of the team, right, when it comes to the COVID engagement and support in our country's efforts and our efforts in Pennsylvania. So hydrocarbons, right, natural gas is the one we've got the most of in Pennsylvania and produce. I think at this point, your audience probably knows we're the number two energy state in the country. Natural gas reserves on par with a country like Saudi Arabia. And so, that gas that we produce right here in PA has made massive contributions in the fight against COVID. Ultimately producing feedstocks for the chemicals and plastics that are used in things like gowns and masks, face shields and gloves, not to mention hand sanitizer. So we think of the use for that. And hand sanitizer, if you look at it, there's a couple different versions of it, but for most standard stuff, it's made of, they call it, they use the name a few different ways, but isopropanol. So one of the big products we have that comes with natural gas in many parts of the state is propane. So if you think of that propanol and go back to remember high school chemistry class, which is where many of us, right, put down chemistry, at least in, from an educational standpoint, for the rest of our academic careers. But you have propane, and which you can turn into other products like propanol, propylene, or isopropanol, or isopropylene. And so that goes into the hand sanitizer, which is now ubiquitous. Anywhere you go, whether it's a supermarket, your home, your kids going to school, there are those containers that are either self-serve or pump-serve with products ultimately that are derived from hydrocarbons and natural gas.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. You're right. We've come used to that. You know, you go in, you use the sanitizer, you leave, it's everywhere. And we teach our kids to make sure they do that just to, for the extra safety and to be safe. And I think at times, and I think even our audience, a lot of people out there aren't aware of where some of these products come from. You know, the plastics, everybody can, I think for the most part, have a better understanding. But you go to the medical equipment, as you mentioned, it's just been a tremendous godsend that we're able to produce that here in, Appalachia, Pennsylvania, and, the U.S., because, as the fight has continued, we continue through it's still in the pandemic. We know it's not over, and we know, a lot of those parts that you touched on there is going to continue on and long past, long past whenever the end is of the pandemic. Using hand sanitizer has always been, encouraged, but that's going to be something I believe that's just a part of life as we continue on and, live past the pandemic. And one thing I want to, kind of transition is, now we're seeing the vaccine, roll out. We've seen last several months where, two companies have been approved. And I believe a third one is, a few, hopefully days away. As a country and as a state, we're starting to see millions of doses go out there, hopefully on a daily basis here within a month. And I think sometimes people forget, the role the industry has on the vaccines. And maybe if you could just talk a little bit about that, from, the vaccine response and the rollout of the vaccines, across the country, and a little bit about the impact that the oil and gas industry has had in this these efforts.
Yeah, Matt. And one, I have to give a plug and a hat tip to, I think, a mutual friend in Kevin Sunday. For those listening that don't know Kevin, yeah. Kevin's a director of government affairs with the PA Chamber of Business and Industry, and does a lot of work on the energy side and the policy side. So he has a piece that was in the Post Gazette and talks a lot about this. And so one of the things, and I'll directly quote Kevin here because he wrote it about as good as I can say it, is that ultimately keeping the vaccines at their most effective means refrigeration. And the materials needed to create these environments are composed of oil and natural gas produced plastics, such as polycarbonate, polypropylene, and polystyrene. So the same way I talked about propanol and hand sanitizer, you have those same building blocks that ultimately go into, creating those refrigeration, or in some cases, the significant, freezing temperatures that are needed to keep some of these vaccines functional, usable. So I think, again, it was a great piece by Kevin, but ultimately, that's key, not to forget things like transportation, and distribution and we touched on the medical equipment, the vaccine, it's a liquid, right? So it needs to be in a container. It needs to be distributed, and all those things touch on, natural gas liquids and hydrocarbons.
And Joe, I'd just like to build off of what you're saying there. It just occurred to me as you were talking about Kevin's piece, and Kevin's been on the program many times, a good friend of the program. I don't see a refrigeration center that's powered solely with windmills and solar, and I don't see a fleet of electric vehicles the only way that we're distributing these vaccines. In fact, it's hydrocarbons that are providing the jet fuel to move it, the diesel fuel and the gasoline to deliver it. And actually a whole nother thing that just didn't occur to me until we were talking there, the propane that's used in the refrigeration process. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast are probably saying, what do you mean propane? I use that in my back porch to heat my barbecue grill, right? Or that little burner I take with me to the tailgate parties. But propane is actually can be used as a refrigerant, right? About how it's being used because I've heard talks about like moving away from Freon and replacing it with propane. Joe, could you spend a minute just on how that hydrocarbon can be actually used in the cooling process?
Yeah, and I'd say propane, the other one I'd focus you on is ethane, is used that way. So interesting enough, in Marcusook, which is the southeast tip of the state, with our Mariner East system, have lines that pretty much are the Pennsylvania Turnpike, east to west version of the PA Turnpike, but for hydrocarbons and natural gas liquids. So we built first of its kind ethane truck rack, at the facility, and our main customers are folks that ultimately use it for refrigerant. So there is a market, for ethane specifically, and certainly for propane, but ethane especially, to be used as a refrigerant to keep things at those super cool temperatures that are needed for things like the vaccine and other products, especially in the healthcare and pharmaceutical world.
Fascinating. I didn't realize ethane could be used in that way. I was comfortable with throwing out the propane part there because I've read some stuff on it, but I'll have to dig a little bit into the ethane. Let's switch gears here a little bit from COVID, one massive pandemic that we've been going through, to another issue that's been talked about over the last few weeks now, grid reliability and energy security, energy supply. These are topics we talk about on the program all the time. Texas especially, but parts of the Midwest were hit with a devastating cold spell, cold front, polar vortex, whatever you want to call it. It got very cold. They weren't prepared for it the way that we typically are used to it up here. And their electric reliability came into question, failed in certain regards, and people were left without, affordable, abundant, accessible energy. What is the role that Energy Transfer plays, being a national company, in providing that the energy that's needed to keep not only, say, Texas's grid on, but grids like PJM where we are today?
Yeah, so one of the things, and it's kind of gotten a new life in COVID times, is talking about critical infrastructure, those words, or essential jobs, essential personnel. And so a lot of folks that weren't necessarily in those fields probably never thought anything of it. But if you remember early on in COVID, they were terms that were used in terms of, with worry about spread of the virus, but there were certain things that had to happen, right? Folks need to turn a switch and have their lights go on. More importantly than just lights is heat and cooling, depending on where you're at in the country. When you have those frigid temperatures, heat is a necessity. It's not an option. In the summers in places like Arizona, where, they have those plus 100 degree temperatures, you need cooling to function. Could you live without it? Sure. But could you function in the society we have without it? Probably not. And so that's where the critical infrastructure comes in. And on our side, with Energy Transfer and Sunoco Pipeline, a subsidiary, we're used to, weather events that impact basically either demand for product or the ability to move things. We certainly have had weather events, in particular on the Gulf Coast, where you're more hurricane prone, cold weather events like this. And so it's a really a kudos to our employees that are out in the field, and I would say probably others in the industry. But I know for a fact we had pipeliners and other folks that were out in Texas during these cold temperatures, or at times in cold temperatures in Pennsylvania and New York and Michigan and North Dakota, and deal with that. And they make sure that those pipelines stay functional. And I know when you look at, because it's critical, the gas supply. And, we're certainly proud of Energy Transfer. We're proud to say that our pipelines, they never stop flowing as a result of the in Texas during this or anywhere else, as a result of the combined efforts of hundreds of employees, if not thousands, across our system.
Yeah, and I saw that across the board with so many of your industry peers as well, just continuing to provide that needed resource, that energy resource.
And that was part one of Bill and Matt's conversation with Joe McGinn, Vice President of Public Affairs at Energy Transfer. We'll have more of that interview coming up in a future show. I'm DC Taylor. This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and Matt Henderson. We'll be back with more. Please stay tuned.
Safe, our natural gas pipelines.
Pipelines are the safest, most reliable way to move gas. In fact, you really can't move natural gas any other way. You can't get to a home. You can't get to a manufacturing facility without the use of a pipeline.
The amount of savings a customer is seeing is on average $2,000 a year. Think about that, $2,000 in savings.
Cabot Oil and Gas Corporation, producing abundant opportunities.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Welcome to the Energy Update presented by the Institute for Energy Research for the week of March 1st, 2021. I'm Alex Stevens. This week, I want to highlight a bunch of IER's content that's focused on the blackouts in Texas. First up, we have a blog entitled Understanding the Texas Energy Crisis that explains what happened in Texas last week. It focuses on the recent changes in the power mix, and that blog can be found on our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. I also want to highlight the latest episode of the Plugged In podcast, where I sat down with IER's Director of Policy, Kenny Stein, to discuss the situation in Texas. Here's a short clip from that episode.
But initially, let's just be clear that this was a historic storm, historic low temperatures. For the time of year, these set record temperatures all across the entire state, and it flirted with the all-time records going back to, I think, 1899 was when the all-time records were set. And those records, of course, were set in December, which is December and January is the normal cold time, relatively cold time in Texas. It's very unusual for it to be this late in February. So it was an extreme amount of cold, and not only was it an extreme amount of cold, it covered the entire state. Texas will periodically get cold fronts that move in. But it's normally, you know, it'll be the northern half of the state will be really cold. The southern half of the state will be fine. So that has an effect on the electricity distribution because normally Texas is big enough that you can move electricity around to the parts of the state that need it. But this time the entire state was at freezing or below freezing, even down the Rio Grande Valley in northern Mexico, that it was below freezing. So everybody was using electricity. Everybody needed heat. So let's have that in the back of our minds that this was virtually unprecedented. It's comparable to some early 20th century and late 19th century storms, but those also, remember, were before Texas had electricity. So it's just a different situation. However, you know, having said all that, deep freezes are not uncommon in Texas. They happen periodically. There was one in 2011. There was another big one in 1989. Both times, millions of people lost power. So while these types of freezes are infrequent, and this was an extreme freeze, it still happens regularly, and the grid could have and should have been better planned for it. So that's where you get into the policy issues. So I'll just as at a high level, I sort of have my own ranking of sure. responsibility, like what, you know, and this is sort of in order of highest to lowest. First of all, ERCOT, the Texas grid regulator, I think had a planning failure. Whether it was a lack of imagination or not looking at the information hard enough, not preparing, there was a planning failure very clearly. Secondly, you know, Texas homes and buildings and infrastructure pipelines just aren't built for this kind of cold. They're designed for the middle of summer to shed heat. They're not designed to retain heat. So when you get extreme cold outside, the Texas homes, Texas buildings, just they're not designed for that. And so it takes an enormous amount of gas or electricity or anything to keep the home, keep a house even like tolerable at a tolerable temperature. So that's an important part in that, because that drove up demand hugely. Third, the Texas market design. This exposed some weaknesses in the Texas market design. It clearly doesn't sufficiently incentivize power plants being winterized. You know, there's no financial incentive for that. And there's not enough financial incentive to have backup power supplies online. And you saw the weaknesses of both of those were cruelly exposed, you know, this past week. Fourth, reliance on intermittent power sources, especially wind. You know, over 20% of Texas's electricity last year came from wind, and wind did not contribute to this crisis. So, and that's a problem when it's a fifth of your supplies. And then finally, natural gas generation is the dominant, it's all 50%, maybe a little more than 50% of Texas electricity generation. The problem is in the winter, there is competition for natural gas for home heating. 40% of Texas homes are heated with natural gas. So when they're both competing for power, you know, home heating wins out, it takes priority over power generation. And that exacerbated the supply problems that we saw. So again, there's blame to go all around, but that's sort of, in my personal opinion, the order of responsibility.
I'll be continuing to cover developments in Texas with next week's guest, Robert Bryce, where I'll be talking with him about his experience in Texas and his recent Forbes articles highlighting why this event demonstrates problems with the Electrify Everything movement. You can find the Plugged In podcast on all the major podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. The podcast is also available on our website, instituteforenergyresearch.org. Please take the time to rate and review the podcast, as it helps other people find our work. Thank you for listening. Until next week, I'm Alex Stevens.
This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Matt Henderson, and Rusty Fender. I'm DC Taylor, and we'll get to the careers, the job segment portion of our program coming up in just a few. Brought to you by Lackawanna College. First, it's time for the top five stories over the past 7 days. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale, and you can find it at marcellusdrilling.com. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So this week we have again for you a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five last week, Equinor looks to sell operations in Utica Shale and grow non-op Marcellus Utica. Oil and gas drilling giant Equinor, I believe I'm saying that right, formerly State Oil, is owned by the Norwegian government. Equinor State Oil has drilled in the Marcellus Utica for years. It looks like that may be coming to an end, at least the active drilling part. Equinor officials say they are evaluating their U.S. shale holdings, including their active drilling on 27,000 acres in the Utica Shale, with an eye towards selling. However, the same official said the company may want to increase its non-operated Marcellus Utica holdings, currently at around 205,000 acres. As recently as June 2019, the company reported drilling 9 to 14 Utica wells per year. But in March 2020, just prior to the outbreak of coronavirus, the company decided to temporarily suspend its Utica and Bakken drilling program. In August of 2020, Equinor said it would not drill any more new wells in 2020 in the United States. Last week, Equinor announced it is selling its Bakken assets. Now, all other U.S. assets are under the same kind of review, in quotes, as the Bakken, including Equinor's Utica drilling assets. Rusty?
Number four, D.C., net gas spot prices continue to soar across the MU, elsewhere as well. Yesterday, we told you that natural gas, i.e. cash prices, at various pipeline trading hubs and hit fresh one-year highs, including here in the Marcellus Utica. Well, guess what? It's happened again, and with no end in sight. Due to the cold and snowy weather blanketing much of the country, nat gas prices continue to soar everywhere. We included price charts from NGI for select locations of interest to the MU. That's places where the MU molecules flow and are traded. Now, first up is Boston, and the Algonquin City Gate hit $16, a multi-million BTU during the day, averaged out to be $12.67 yesterday. Now, the New York City Iroquois Zone 2 hub traded gas at over 10 multi-million BTUs. That's the MU molecules flow to the Chicago City Gate 2 via the Rockies Express pipeline, where the price hit $8 per multi-million BTU. Now, right here in the Marcellus Utica, we like to track two different hubs. The first is Dominion South near Pittsburgh, where the price was over $4 multi-million BTU. And up in the northeast corner of the Pennsylvania Marcellus is the Tennessee Gas Zone 4 Marcellus hub, which typically bumps along at around $1.50 multi-million BTU. It also traded at over $4. All aboard the Polar Express. We love cold weather. Well, for natural gas, that is, DC.
All right. The third most popular story over the past week. Heinz Endowments launches another fake report bashing the Marcellus Utica. For the past week or so, we've spotted stories in the Democrat press, in other words, mainstream news, about a so-called research report issued by a front organization for the Heinz Endowments called the Ohio River Valley Institute, ORVI. The ORVI recently released a report that purports to show the fracking miracle in the Marcellus Utica hasn't actually created all that many jobs or economic benefits. Here's the first tip. This report is a scam and a sham. The lead researcher from the so-called ORVI doesn't live in the Ohio River Valley, nor anywhere near the Marcellus Utica. He's a playwright who lives thousands of miles away on the left coast in Washington State. In other words, the report is fiction. Here's the second tip. This, quote, report is a scam and a sham. Cornell University's Tony Ingraffia, thoroughly discredited by making false claims that that coal is a cleaner energy source than natural gas because he's an irrational hater of fracking, sits on ORVI's board. And of course, the ORVI is nothing more than a front group, yet another name for the ultra left, biased and virulent anti-fossil fuel Heinz Endowments. This report is the intellectual equivalent of toilet paper. And yet, so-called mainstream news picks it up and regurgitates it unquestioningly. Such is what happens in a society that is rapidly moving towards eliminating free speech. Rusty?
Amen, DC. And story number two is the future of natural gas, hydrogen, and carbon capture. Well, you can't miss it if you look at energy headlines. The word hydrogen is everywhere, being touted as the energy fuel of the future. Right behind it is carbon capture. The two work together in many cases. Now, our friend Joe Barone is dedicating an entire conference to these topics. The first annual Appalachian Hydrogen and Carbon Capture Conference will be held April 8th in Pittsburgh. It's a timely conference worthy of your consideration. Below, we bring you more background on both hydrogen and carbon capture. Yesterday, we had the pleasure of talking to Perry Babb, chairman and acting CEO of Key State Zero, a petrochemical plant project that includes natural gas synthesis and carbon storage coming to Clinton County, Pennsylvania. Now, we're slowly getting up to speed on what hydrogen and carbon capture means for the natural gas space. Perry helped us fill in some of the gaps in our knowledge. Does the rise of hydrogen mean the end of natural gas? Not by a long shot. As we stated in a previous hydrogen article from a few weeks ago, some 75% of hydrogen produced comes from natural gas. While the burning of nat gas to provide heat may decrease in time, demand for methane is not going to decrease anytime soon, not for decades. The sooner we come to grips with the role of nat gas in the renewable and clean energy future, the better off we'll be, according to Babb. And yes, natural gas has a bright future in the hydrogen carbon capture future. Things looking up there, DC.
All right, great. And now time for the number one most popular story on MDN over the past week. Cash nat gas price in Oklahoma hits $999 per multi-million BTU. MU through the roof, too. Just a few days ago, we told you about the craziness in natural gas prices in Oklahoma and elsewhere, like Texas, that happened last Friday when the cash price for nat gas hit $600 in trading at one hub in the Sooner State. Hang on. Yesterday, the cash price at the same hub in Oklahoma hit $999. And of course, yesterday, this is a few days ago. This is beyond crazy, and the high prices are now beginning to travel east to the Marcellus Utica. No, not that crazy, but we're seeing prices at places like Dominion South and Tennessee Gas Zone 4 that we haven't seen in, well, we can't remember the last time we've seen prices this high. Production of oil and consequently natural gas in the Southwest and Mid-Continent region is way down due to freeze-offs. Combine the decrease in production out there with ongoing cold and snowy weather in the Northeast, and it combines to drive up demand for Marcellus Utica gas, both here in the Northeast and anywhere our pipelines can connect to. Our gas is in demand. The Dominion South near Pittsburgh trading hub is now flirting with $8 per multi-million BTU. The trading hub in northeastern Pennsylvania, where gas historically sells at some of the lowest prices anywhere in the country, typically under $1.50 per multimillion BTU, the Tennessee Gas Zone 4 Marcellus, the cash price yesterday or a couple days ago flirted with $6 per multimillion BTU. This is history. You're living it. These prices will come crashing back down when the foul weather clears and production is restored. Until then, enjoy the ride. Those are the top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the headlines each day, it's easy. Just sign up for MDN's free daily email at marcellusdrilling.com/email. All right. And now it's time for the job segment. Your careers in the gas and the energy industries brought to you by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
And thank you, D.C. Taylor. In Pennsylvania, Southwest Energy, looking for a field operator, level one, that's based in Tunkhannock. CS Energy, an electrical project manager out of Chambersburg. Stantec, a construction inspector out of Pittsburgh. Energy Transfer, looking for a senior pipeline specialist based in Wexford. Talon Energy, a production foreman out of Berwick. DT Energy, an operating engineer out of Pittsburgh. Exelon Corporation, an opening for a GIS asset management out of Plymouth Meeting. Baker Hughes, a field engineer and field operator for their wireline services out of Mount Pleasant. PTW, Energy Services, a journeyman out of Tunkhannock. And PP&L, looking for a field supervisor for their electrical division based in Allentown. Moving to Ohio, Gulfport Energy, a control room technician out of St. Clairsville. Comanche Gas Solutions, looking for a field technician, also out of St. Clairsville. American Electric Power, looking for a technology intern for their infrastructure and operations division out of Columbus. TRC Companies Incorporated, looking for a damage prevention inspector out of Cincinnati. Sky Climber Renewables, a wind service technician based in Payne. Buckeye Partners LP, looking for a pipeline technician headquartered in Columbus. Golder Associates, a construction technician level one, also out of Columbus. Think Power Solutions, a transmission line substation inspector out of Chillicothe. Halliburton, looking for a service operator for their cementing unit. It's out of Zanesville. And KLX Energy Services, a testing assistant for their flowback unit out of New Philadelphia. Now in West Virginia, RDR Energy Resources has an opening for an electrical foreman out of Clarksburg. Genmar Services, an experienced underground coal miner. It's out of Beckley, West Virginia. Williams Companies, an operations intern out of Moundsville. EarthRes, a professional land surveyor opening, also out of Moundsville. KLX Energy Services, an operations technician headquartered in Bridgeport. Diefenbach and Ritz, LLC, looking for a survey and a CAD technician. That's out of Bridgeport. Pillar Innovations, a tower services technician out of Morgantown, and the Beitzel Corporation, roustabouts and laborers for their field services unit out of Wheeling. Last stop is New York State, Southern Cross Field Services, a utilities damage prevention inspector out of Buffalo, Exelon Corporation, an associate equipment operator for their entry-level position unit out of Oswego. Fisher Associates, looking for an engineer for their land development, also entry-level out of Rochester. The Martin Energy Group, a project manager for the Finger Lakes in central New York State. GE Power, an EHS specialist out of Schenectady. Avangrid, a 2021 summer intern electric operations person. That's for the electrical engineering unit out of Vestal. And Aclara, looking for also an EHS, that's environmental health and serve and safety technician for the entire Empire State of New York. And those, as DC mentioned, are the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. And of course, we always say your future is here with natural gas on the Shale Gas News every week on our network of stations, Gem 104, and of course, TalkWilliamsport.com. We'll see you back here, same station, same time next week for the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosa, Matt Henderson, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Fender. Thank you so much for listening to the Shale Gas News.